Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good afternoon. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So for some of you, this is going to be the second go-round since you, we had a few of you on the webinar this morning.
All the lucky ones, yeah.
So we have recovered from that, and we are set here for another hour with you today. This is live call-in radio. The seminar, the webinar that we had was live type in the chat box session, but we still answered questions, and we can do that again this afternoon if you pick up the phone and dial this magic access number, 800-465-8770. 800-465-8770. That's important when you have live call-in radio, to have somebody actually pick up the phone, dial the number.
That's why Ben's here.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. You got to punch in the number. I'm not sure very many of you likely have dial phones anymore.
True.
It was just a week or so ago, I threw away the last Princess phone in the house.
Oh, you had one. Oh, how about that? Wow. That used to be a big deal, right? Oh, look at that. That's a fancy little phone there. Yeah.
I looked at that and I thought, we don't use it anymore. You know, we walk around with our cell phones in our pockets. Well, one of the big things that the webinar covered today was the many different ways that inflation is affecting us. And it certainly affects the political arena. It's amazing how government can do so many things to screw up our lives and then say, like Superman, I am here to fix it. Except their fixes never seem to work real well.
Funny how that works out really often, yeah.
Superman never messed up. Well, unless he got too close to kryptonite.
Yeah, he's got better writers, yeah. So
that's true. But inflation's is certainly a political lightning rod, and there's lots of misconception about it. So we've recently heard that the consumer price index is up 7.9% from a year ago, and hopefully will peak somewhere around 9%. Though producer price, and that's the one the manufacturers are dealing with, that one's already at 10. So nobody's talking about where it's going to peak.
Right.
But if we're not done with the CPI and the PPI is ahead of it, you know, there's some more bad news that's coming downstream.
That's tagging along. And you know, the predictions about the level that inflation is going to reach are just the same as predictions about, you know, what the levels the S&P is going to reach. They're just a guess, and people don't know, and it's really tough to know in advance where those are heading.
Well, this is the highest inflation since 1981.
Yeah.
And the solution seems to be what Paul Volcker did, which is to raise interest rates. He had a little different situation. Of course, now we're dealing with a war. We didn't have we had a Cold War back there, but nobody was shooting anything.
Nope.
And we managed to deal with that by responding with political pressure. And this administration doesn't seem to be very good at exerting pressure, but they are contributing to the inflation. Now, what drives inflation? This is kind of...
That's a good question. Yep.
Yeah, this really isn't in the background material, but we did kind of touch on it in the webinar today.
Yep.
So the assumption is that interest rates are driving inflation, and actually interest rates are a response to inflation. But what drives inflation is money. Excess money in the system means that people buy things they otherwise wouldn't have thought of buying. And there's more people with money, and they kind of like that thing, too. And so they're standing in line for it. And they got messed up with COVID, and all of a sudden there weren't very many things. Well, now you have people standing in line to buy the one that's left on the shelf. So the guy that owns the store says, well, you know, give it to the biggest bidder. You know, just try me. See how much you can offer me. And pretty soon we hit a price where it'll disappear. So we've expanded the money supply astronomically as a result of COVID shutdowns. And for the first time in history, we did this in a coordinated way among central bankers around the world.
Mm, that's really a big deal. And you're absolutely right. And it's never happened before that way, and it's never happened to the degree that it just occurred. And we've never poured this much money on any economy, let alone every economy on earth that had the wherewithal to hand out the cash. Everybody put it out there. So, of course, inflation is global at this point.
Well, and it forced all sorts of changes in the way we get stuff to us. I mean, people who didn't know how to shop online learned how to do so.
Yep.
And we said, well, you can't go to work, but you want to buy something online, so you need it delivered to you. Well, those guys can go to work. Yeah, apparently, they're not at risk like you are. So
right. Don't think about this too much. Yeah, it'll give you a headache. Yeah, trying to figure that out. So
anyway, it's a factor which we're still going to be dealing with when we do the next webinar, which is scheduled for May 7th. I don't know, Perry, did you have time to get the registration link?
It's live. You can register now, so feel free to go to the website and register for the May update.
Yeah, we'll find out what's going on with inflation and the markets. The markets are going to adapt along the way because people adapt. Now, what doesn't often adapt is portfolios. Mm. The way the financial services industry works is you go through some risk questionnaires, and they end up through a magic math algorithm and say, well, what you need is a 60-40, 60% bonds and 40% portfolio. I mean, most of the time, that's really what you get. And it doesn't matter how much the market changes.
That's what you get. Yeah.
It's been figured out.
Stays right there.
We know that. And it doesn't really address inflation and some of the problems that are coming our way. We take a look at government estimates. They grossly underestimated the impact of inflation and what it was going to be. And for more than a year, the Federal Reserve said, go sleep. This is transitory. It's going to pass. And, you know, in another 6 months or so, we'll just wake up and things will be back to normal. And until they weren't.
And that's exactly what happened. They were very dismissive, and there were lots of questions being asked about, hey, you know what, we're looking at inflation in this sector, inflation in that sector, and this looks like it's really coming around. And the Fed was still saying, nah, don't even worry about it. It's just not going to happen. And they have changed their tune since.
And now they're behind the old eight ball, so
to
speak.
Way behind the curve, yep.
And do not have a real solid game plan. So they're going to raise interest rates. They told us there's two things the Fed can do. One is they can raise interest rates and they can quit buying bonds, which is basically adding fuel to a fire that's already raging.
Correct, which is what they said they were going to do.
So they finally raised rates a quarter of a point. Okay, that was a big move.
Yeah.
And then they said, and we will quit buying bonds. Quantitative easing is coming to an end. And it did 3 weeks ago. And in the following 2 weeks, I don't know what the third week ended up be, but in the following 2 weeks when they had quit buying bonds, they spent another $51 billion buying bonds.
Oops.
Yeah. So just exactly what are we supposed to believe? Yeah. Inflation is transitory, but it isn't. We're going to quit buying bonds, but we don't. Okay, that sounds like we have a handle on the situation.
Yeah, that's
Or we wish we did.
They do. They do wish they did, and they are grasping at straws here, trying to figure out what to do, and they're caught between what the politicians want them to do and what the economy needs to have done. And the difference between now and back when you were talking about Paul Volcker didn't care. He was like, we're here to fight inflation and we're raising rates until we take care of it. And it took a long time and it took a huge rate increase. And, you know, we'll see if the current Fed governors have a stomach for that. But so far, it's not looking good.
They certainly don't.
Yeah.
The Fed and major economists are always looking, trying to figure out, look ahead and see what's going on. I mean, that's how
right.
they get paid, because we know the future, and so you want to hire me. Well, there's a rule called the Taylor rule that the Fed uses and well-known economists use, trying to figure out what's coming downstream. And part of that rule, because when you start dealing with interest rates and bonds, it's just math. You figure out that under current conditions, if we're going to use interest rates to nip this inflation in the blossom, because the bud's already open, we need interest rates at 9.5%, not 0.5%. 9.5. How many of you are ready for 9.5% short-term interest rates?
Mm-hmm.
Ouch. Well, they don't want to go there. So they say, well, we do need higher rates. We're going to raise rates over the next 2 years, and we will get to 3, maybe 4, but we need 9.5. How are we going to get that done?
Yeah, it's going to be tough, and it's going to be tough without. They're trying to engineer the soft landing, as they always say. We want a soft landing here. We don't want to push the economy into a recession. But we are so far behind, you know, we're over a year late, easily a year, maybe 2 years late in raising rates, that now we have to raise rates quickly. And that's how you push an economy into a recession. So they're trying to avoid that. But I'm not sure that's going to be possible. It just may be that if inflation just keeps getting more and more out of control, they're going to have to just bump them up way more than they wanted to. And I hope it doesn't get there, but it's highly, highly likely. It's very possible that that is exactly where we could be heading. And right now we're going to be heading for our first break of the afternoon. I'd like to remind everyone that we do have our next market update webinar on the calendar. It's for Saturday, May 17th, 9:00 in the morning. And you can register for that by going to IRIRadio.com. That is IRIRadio.com. Just head to the webinar page. There's a registration link there. Just give that a click. You're going to get an email back. And then on May 7th, just give that link a click and you'll be live online with us. You can see the charts we're talking about. We can show you what it is that we're thinking about the market, what's going on out there. And it's a really great time to get some more of your questions answered about what's going on in the market or the economy or individual securities for that matter. We'll be happy to give you a second opinion on anything you own, about whether you should still have it or whether it's something you should have let go of before. So again, you can register for that at IRIRadio.com. If you have a question for us here this afternoon, we would love to talk to you. Give us a call, 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Well, there are a lot of things about the market and the economy that are a mystery, and I'm sure Inspector Clouseau would be a little bit puzzled here. But I was thinking about the last segment. We're talking about inflation. And if you want to join the conversation, we have an open phone line. Just give Ben a call here, 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. And if you can't hang around, be sure to register for the May 7th webinar. That link is on our website at IRIRadio.com. I mentioned that the interest rates really weren't the driver on inflation. They are a response to inflation.
Sure, yeah.
So what did cause inflation? And what causes inflation is too much money floating around. You end up, you want to buy a widget because a widget's important for just...
I've always wanted one, yeah.
And, you know, every household needs a widget, and everybody kind of has some money, so everybody's got a buck, and they go down to the store, and I got a buck, and you know, buy a widget. But what happens when the government gives everybody 10 bucks? Well, people who thought they'd like to have a widget but needed to buy groceries didn't buy the widget. They now have extra money, so they're standing in line to buy the widget. And the money gets spent, and the government says, things aren't slow. They're too slow. And they give them more money. Well, now, not only can I buy a widget, I can buy a gazoo or something else that I don't really need, but I got money and I can, you know, I can buy it. And so we expand the money supply. So the Fed's going to raise interest rates to cancel inflation, except that that's not what caused it. We just dumped tons of money in. So the Fed says we're going to stop buying bonds and putting money into the stock market because that's where it ends up. It
sure.
ends up through Wall Street. And Wall Street doesn't go down on the street corner and start handing out dollars. They say, well, look at all this cash that the Fed just gave us.
That's never happened, yeah.
So it's no wonder that Wall Street is very, very profitable the last couple of years. But in any event, we end up all with all this money floating in the system, and people see stock going up, they add it, they sell it, they take money out, and we've got all this surplus cash. The Fed says we're going to stop buying bonds, and maybe one of these days they actually will quit and start selling the bonds they own. That is a risk to the stock market because it shrinks liquidity. But then they have an opponent. That opponent is called Congress, because Congress seems to not understand the concept of a budget. So whatever they want, they just say, hey, we'll just borrow more money from someplace else around the world. We'll dump it into our system. So even if the Fed shrinks its balance sheet, which should have a negative impact on the market at least short term, Congress is going to dump money into it because they won't like the slowdown that it's causing.
Right.
So until we see both of them respond to quit pumping the system, quit putting gas on the inflationary fire, this problem is going to last a while. And for most of you, if you who were not on the webinar with us this morning, it is going to permeate little tiny cracks in your household budget that you never knew were impacted by one of the major inputs, which is fossil fuels.
And it's that's a very, very broad input. It really does affect virtually everything, and it's going to be very broad based. And until, like you said, Don, and until the Congress comes up with, you know what, we're part of the problem, we're going to have to back this off, which will not be until they think they're going to be voted out. I mean, that's the only thing they really care about is losing their power. So until they think it's costing them enough that they're going to have to move on, they're not going to. And inflation is dangerous to an economy. It's dangerous to everyone's personal economy, and it really needs to be addressed. And they're just really dragging their feet.
Well, and it's dangerous to the markets, and to particularly the bond market, which has been for 40 years the safe haven for investors. You want to reduce the volatility in your account? We have the system. We sell you more bonds. That's worked for 40 years, and that boat has a hole in it.
Yeah,
it's not going to float anymore.
Kind of done. That's kind of turned over, and it's going to take a while before people recognize it. But we've been saying for some time that bonds are not the safe haven that they used to be, and they're not going to be for a very, very long time now. And people need to come to grips with that. Wall Street, unfortunately, loves that 60-40 portfolio. They love those 40% bonds because they used to be able to just ignore that and let it run. And that is no longer the case. You don't want that to happen to your portfolio.
So we have not had a protracted bear market in bonds in 40 years.
Yeah.
And the one that we had previous to that was a 40-year bear market in bonds. And they weren't selling 60-40 portfolios back in the 40s, 50s, 60s. then to make it full 40 years, we have to go back into the 30s. So, that this is a brand new, relatively brand new process for selling people portfolios. But the world is changing. We have major alteration in the factors that are going to affect bond markets. And I mentioned just briefly that the world's changing here because the inputs to inflation are really have an awful lot of core commonality in fossil fuels.
Oh, yeah.
And you say, yeah, I can't be. Okay, so what's one of the big pushes right now in Europe? Well, Europe has found himself to be in exactly the position that President Trump said, this is what you're doing to yourself. You're going to be blackmailed by Putin. And they laughed and they laughed. And they said, you got to be kidding me. They aren't laughing now. And they need liquefied natural gas. And President Biden said, we'll get more liquid natural gas over to you. And I don't know who made the call, but there were tankers from here to Asia that they turned around in the middle of the ocean and they sent them over to Europe. Okay, now we've been selling natural gas to Europe and Asia. I mean, China's
long
a big importer.
Yep.
Japan's a big importer. But now Europe really needs it, and they are allies. So we're going to sell it to them. However, it has been years since we have built a plant to compress natural gas. And if anybody just kind of rattles your head just for a minute, remember that XL pipeline thing? Yeah, well, we need pipelines to get the natural gas to the ports where we can compress it to put it on containers, carriers, liquid natural gas carriers, of which there are not very many on the open water.
Right.
To ship to Europe, where they do not have, they've done the same thing. The greenies have kept them from building any plants to take on to liquid natural gas. And as a matter of fact, building pipelines seemed like it was going to really mess up the view of the mountains when we dig through there to put that pipeline in. So we can't make what they need. We can't ship what they need. They can't take what we need. And if they did, they can't get it to where they need it. This problem of needing clean fuel, which natural gas is, the next cleanest one's nuclear. Nobody wants that. This is a problem that's going to last 10, 20 years before there's real balance in it. Now, so why would you care? Well, natural gas is a key component to making fertilizer. Guess why you need fertilizer? It's to keep your grocery store shelves stocked with, you know, food stuff. Well, not only that, but we grow corn, which supports feed for livestock, pork, beef, poultry. And in our country, we eat a lot of that. A lot of other countries eat it too. And they buy corn from us. Well, the farmers have a dilemma this year because the cost of fertilizer is up 130% from last year. Now, if you're a farmer in the Midwest, where they grow a lot of corn, you're looking at that and saying, I don't know if I can make any money. Do I have an alternative?
Which is what they're there for, by the way.
Yeah, well, yeah, a farmer, what's he need money for? I mean, right. He grows his own food, right?
Don, we got a call. We got a call on the line. Maybe we can get it in before the break here.
Okay.
Yeah, we got Bob from Snohomish asking about leaving a broker. Bob, you're on the air with Don and Perry. Go ahead. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
It's just the questions if you're thinking about leaving your current financial advisor, what questions should you ask? I know that sounds cryptic, but
Well, in our opinion, you should never leave your current broker, right? If it's us, so don't do that.
It's not you.
If you're leaving a broker, our bottom line usually is, you know, you don't need to ask them anything or tell them anything. If it's not working with them for whatever reason, if you don't like them, if you don't trust them, if you don't trust the process, you don't have to find a good excuse or a good reason. If that's where you are, then you should go, because, you know, life's too short, and you shouldn't be working with someone that it just doesn't click with. And that includes us. We tell people all the time, you know, our contract with our clients says, if you want to go, you can go for any reason or for no reason. It doesn't matter. You can just go. And that's the way it should be. That's what working with a fiduciary is like. And, what's the biggest concern? What are you concerned about with leaving? What do you want to ask them, Bob?
It's a managed account. It's dropped substantially. It appears to have, overload on tech stocks, and it doesn't seem to have. It just seems to be floating in the wind. Maybe as I think I've heard you guys talk about standard portfolio theory or something.
Sure. Yeah, it sounds like if it's still tech stock heavy, you know, tech stocks have been the driver for so long, for over a decade, and now they're just getting pounded. And a lot of advisors don't make that switch. It's like, well, no, we're just going to wait until they come back. And it's that waiting where you can really get a portfolio buried, and which is what we don't advise doing. We don't care how well something has done, we want to know how well something is doing. And if it's not helping the portfolio anymore, it should go. And if it comes back around, which it probably will, let's buy it back then. Just don't hang on to it in the meantime. But don't let your conversation with your broker stop you from doing what you feel like you need to be doing. It's more important that you get in the situation that you're comfortable with than staying in a situation your broker is comfortable with.
So, Barry, Bob, can you hang on? If you can hang on through our break, we're late for that. But I've got some other questions I'd like to talk to you if you're willing to do that. Can you hang on?
Sure.
Okay. Let's take our break.
Let's go ahead and get a break out of here. Very good. I'd like to remind everyone that we do have a weekly e-newsletter, The Week in Review. If you'd like to start receiving that, you need to send us an email. Send that to help@iriradio.com. That is help@iriradio.com. Just put Week in Review in the subject line and put your first and last name in the body of the email, and you will begin receiving that this Monday. It goes out most Mondays, and it's a really good look at the previous week's economic news. We try to give you a pretty good look at things that are important to pay attention to and things that you can probably safely ignore, which is important because there's so much noise out there. If you'd like to talk to us this afternoon, like Bob, give us a call, 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. You are listening to Investor Resources here on AM 770 KTTH. Stay with us. We will be right back.
I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden along with the sunshine. There's got to be a little rain sometime.
Well, that's what Bob is asking for. He's asking for a little sunshine.
There you go.
And if you have a portfolio that is tech heavy, as you said, then that's a major part of the issue. And that is how did your portfolio actually get constructed? So are you working with a broker, part of a major brokerage firm, or even not a major brokerage firm, or you actually have a registered investment advisor, fee only, no brokerage house connections, where he's a fiduciary? And in either of those events, the latter, which is what we are, is registered investment advisors, fiduciaries, no alternative source of commissions or income anywhere except for what the clients give us. It sounds like what you probably are stuck with is referred to as a strategic portfolio. where you initially answer some questions about your objectives, your goals, your risk tolerance, and magically they came up at the next appointment and said, well, here's the portfolio we think you should have. They stick you in that, and it basically, that's what you're going to live with until you change the answers to your questions about how much risk you're willing to tolerate, what the drawdown tolerance is, how long you're going to live, how much money you have, what your net worth is, all things which have absolutely no impact on the stock market. How you feel about stocks has nothing to do with market risk. It does reflect that you don't want to lose money and how important that is. And if you're really wealthy, then volatility is not usually as big a deal. But if you don't have a lot, volatility is important. So I just, if you're tech heavy, I just looked up the returns on
what is the definition of wealthy?
Well, that's relative to everybody. I mean, people have their own standards on whether or not they're wealthy. But I'm thinking if you've got a 20 or $30 million in net worth, and your stock market account loses $150,000. I mean, it's not going to change your lifestyle. But if you have $250,000 and you lose $50,000, that's a big deal. And that's a 20% drawdown. And you're saying, how am I ever going to get $50 back? Particularly if I'm just sitting still. And we've addressed that issue in various webinars. After the tech bubble fell, it was almost 18 years just to get even because you're hanging on to things that at one point in life looked like they were real winners. And we have a different set of things that look like they're going to be real winners, and then they crash. So in a tech-weighted portfolio, you're stuck with what we call the FANGs. That's Facebook. They call it Meta now. You got Facebook and Apple and Amazon and Microsoft and Google, and we now have Tesla that's in there. So it's FANG plus T. And the New York FANG index peaked in November, as did the NASDAQ on November 3rd. And then it fell 32% between November and the middle of March. And it just recently had a bounce. So you're only down 17%. But part of the problem inside the FANGs is Facebook, or Meta, ticker's Frank Baker, FB. And from the high in November, it's fallen 51%. And even with the recent bounce, it's still negative 41 over the last 4.5 months. That's not good news. And if you have a strategy imposed on your portfolio, the plan is these will recover. Just, you know, go to sleep. Don't, the brokers basically, don't bother me. These are good companies. They'll survive, and you will too. Eventually. Just don't bother me. So what you seem to be seeking is not a strategic strategy, which is kind of set your heading in your airplane, put it on autopilot, and go back in the back and go to sleep. Except even autopilot makes some minor adjustments to get you where you need to go. We believe that particularly with the dynamics of the current economy and trying to figure out how to recover from COVID, how to deal with the excess money in the system, that a more active adjustment needs to be made in the portfolio holdings. And when FANG tech is down 10-15%, instead of going to sleep, you should do something about it. If you've listened to us very long, we talk about owning leaders and selling laggards. Now, tech is going to be another leader, but a lot of these companies that people take for granted are at the end of their major growth cycle. And the next 10 and 20 years of tech is not going to be these companies whose names we know well. That's not going to be addressed in your portfolio if you have a strategic strategy. Now, how do you deal with that? Well, you have to find somebody with an investment policy, a process that you believe you understand and with which you can be comfortable. And then you just simply open up a new account. And if you want to be courteous, you call your current advisor and say, tomorrow you will get notification that I have moved my account to another firm. And you do not have to ask or answer questions. And if you have a mature advisor, they will say, hate to see you go, but what can we do to help make it easy for you at this point? If you have an immature advisor, they lose their temper and they get mad and they don't want to talk to you or they hang up on you, which is three-year-old behavior. But it happens. I don't know. Does that help you, Bob?
I was actually hoping for a series of questions. And no, I'm not the $30 million person, but I always hope to be.
We would all like to be there. Some of us run out of time. You don't need to call and ask him anything if you've decided to move your account. Not sure you want to do that. The question is, explain to me why we still own these losers and how much further down are they going to go before we change the portfolio?
It's more complex than that. There's four different managed accounts and they're all big firms, so.
Well,
the problem, Bob, is that they're probably all doing the same thing. That's what happens. They're all doing modern portfolio theory. They're all, you answered risk return questionnaires, and they're all doing the same thing. So you're getting a similar result across the board. And if you know, they're going to call them different names. They're going to say, well, we have a different spin on it. But the underpinnings of all of those firms are probably very, very similar. And still, the bottom line is, I just encourage you to, if you're not comfortable with where you are, it's important to find someone somewhere where you are. And you can't do that by talking to them because their only answer is going to be, well, staying here is the correct move.
There is a question you can ask, and that is you can go back and ask them, I'm trying to understand why we're having the year we are here in these portfolios because you guys are managing them. Are you using modern portfolio theory to build my account?
Probably, yes. I already asked that, and one of them answered yes.
What about the others?
I didn't ask those yet.
Well, I would, because what you may find is they're all doing that. That's typical of particularly of large firms. And if that's the case, then that compounds your problem because there's probably not that much difference structurally. And then the second question would be, is this portfolio process strategic or tactical? And if they're strategic, which means they're not going to make major changes in a long time, that also compounds the problem and the frustration that you have.
So we're assuming you don't use modern portfolio theory, so you use something else?
You are correct about that, and if you want some understanding of that, if you go to our website, iriradio.com, click on the video tab, and I would suggest you watch the January of this year and last year. To get to last year's, you have to page down to the bottom and go through a couple of pages to get to it, but it's there. And watch the two January videos, and they'll give you a summary introduction to modern portfolio theory and why we don't use it and how we walked through 2020 and didn't take big losses because we don't use it. I mean, we don't sit still for stuff like that. And if you want us to take a look at your portfolios and do an overlay on them, We could do that too, but all you have to do is call us or send us an email. The email is help@iriradio.com. The office number is on our website, but it's 800-317-9119. And we're up against another break.
We are. Thanks, Bob. Thanks for calling in. Best of luck moving on. Sometimes that's a hard situation to be in, but it's important for you to take care of yourself there and get in the spot where you need to be. I'd like to remind everyone that we are coming up on our, not coming up, but we have our next market update webinar on the calendar. It's for Saturday, May 7th at 9 a.m. You can register for that at iriradio.com. If you'd like to talk to us here this afternoon, give us a call at 800-465-8770. It's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Well, that song is Take It Higher. And that's what Bob wants to have happen to his portfolio. That's what we all want to have happen to our portfolios. We'd love to be in that, those multi-million dollar, big 7-8 number portfolios, but we don't. I mean, it takes time and it takes, in order to get there, assuming you're going to work for it, you've got to save money along the way and invest it and take risk. But the one thing that he was really struggling with, that he only knows about one of his managers, and that they're a modern portfolio theory application into the markets, which really brings up this next issue. If I skip forward with some of your prep work, Perry, on the question of where did the 60-40 portfolio idea come from?
Ah, good question.
And why is it the gold standard for portfolio construction? Because most of the time that the stock market has been around, nobody ever heard of a 60-40 portfolio.
Nope, just wasn't there.
And a short story here. So this really is related rabbit hole, Perry.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. So in 2015, I attended a compliance conference with Pershing, and I spent 2 days there. And so I'm chief compliance officer. It really was a recruiting meeting, but they are doing the compliance work and teaching us and that kind of stuff. And so I've got this guy sitting next to me, and obviously he's from Pershing because they're the only ones in Seattle who are wearing suits, black suits and white shirts and ties.
Still got a suit and tie on. Yeah.
So we knew who the Wall Street guys were.
Yeah.
Anyways, he's sitting next to me for 2 days. We're going through this, and on the breaks, he's interrogating me politely. What do you do? How do you manage money? What do you mean? It's going on with all this stuff. It's repartee. And I'm explaining, we gave up on modern portfolio theory. And the conclusion is that after all this research, I believe that modern portfolio theory is the gold standard, not because it's intended to make money for the clients. Because some of you might remember the book, Where Are All the Customers' Yachts?
There you go.
That was published back in the 70s. That 60-40 isn't because that's how clients are going to make money. It's when clients lose big enough to sue the firm, the 60-40 theory is how they're going to defend themselves, because you, Mr. Customer, answered these questions. And we used your questions to build the portfolio as the math says it should be built for a long-term investor.
So it just falls back to, we're doing what you asked us to. We can't be at fault here. And that holds water most of the time in court.
Well, the attorneys don't know financial theory, so they don't know how to unwind it. And if you want to know how to unwind it, I recommend you buy about a $22 book, paperback, that's an easy read from Amazon. It is The Misbehavior of Markets by Mandelbrot, who's a brilliant guy. And since Markowitz first published the theory that supports 60-40, Mandelbrot saying his math is bad. It's wrong. The conclusions are wrong. But nobody wanted to listen to him because he wasn't going to make sales any easier. And Markowitz stuff generated really pretty pie charts.
It looked great, and it just rolled perfectly into a magnificent sales pitch, and that's where it stays today. So not only is it the almost ironclad protection against being sued by a client, it's a beautiful sales pitch on the way in. So it's perfect for Wall Street, which is why over 90% of advisors use it, and that's what they're going to hand you when you walk in, regardless of what they call it. You know, no one says, "Yeah, we're doing the same thing as everyone else," but they all are.
So the issue is we control risk just by simply putting less money in stocks instead of figuring out which stocks are risky because they're overpriced, and either taking money off the table piecemeal or just selling it outright and buy something that's not overpriced, not extended, that has better profit prospects. That requires rotation instead of rebalancing an account, hanging on to the things that have high risk in them. I mean, that's
the real danger. Yeah, hanging on to the losing part of your portfolio, and in that pie chart portfolio, part of it is always supposed to be losing money. That's the way it works. It's supposed to be losing money. And hanging on to that just makes no sense, because that can go on for a very long period of time. But it's very simple to execute, so it makes it really easy for the firm. Like we said, it gives you legal protection. And by and large, it's a great sales pitch. So it's something easy to hang on to. It's easy to try to keep clients in the fold. Just don't leave. Everything's fine. It will be eventually, and eventually it will be. But you might not be around anymore, and that's the problem.
So how do you figure all that stuff out? Well, there's some really fancy formulas, which most of us don't want to go through. It takes time to learn them, and then you got to remember them, and you got to do spreadsheets. And who's going to do that? So there's a simpler way, and one of the tools that we use is it over the last month, and you could pick a different period. You could pick 6 weeks, you pick a quarter, you could pick the last 6 months.
Yeah.
Pick another time period. Over the last period of time that I'm comfortable with, is my position ahead of cash, or is it causing me to lose money? And one of our rules is, if it's not staying ahead of cash, it doesn't belong in the portfolio, because it means we're losing money with it. Now, that means you sell stuff, and it also means that at some point in time, maybe fairly soon, you'll have to buy it back. But what do you want to do? You want to see how much money you can lose before it turns up?
No one ever said that was their objective coming in. And that doesn't mean we never lose money. Our portfolios do. They go up and down. But we avoid taking the huge loss. We don't ride the 40% down because our process forces us out, even if we don't want to, even if we don't think it's a good idea. It pushes us out of the market, and it'll push us back in the market the same way. So you don't get stuck on the sidelines, and that's the other big threat from the pie chart guys is, well, you'll never get back in. Yeah, we do, because it pushes us back in also.
Well, and there's the argument that you get from modern portfolio theorists and brokers or advisors that use it, is that there's no real good way to get out.
Right.
And of course, if you do, you were lucky. And when the market bottoms, you're going to be too scared to back in. And that's generally true. I mean, I still have people I'm talking to who are still afraid to get back in the market from 2009.
We see them all the time, sure.
That's a problem, but that's because there's no process to make a decision to begin with. And so with modern portfolio theory, say, well, we're long term here and this stuff will work out over the end. So we ignore these drawdowns. I mean, we saw that happen real time when we were using modern portfolio theory. and we were doing what Bob was doing. We were using outside managers. We were hiring Wall Street firms to manage client accounts. And at that time, in the top of the real estate market, talking to these firms, saying, there's a crash coming. This isn't going to keep working. How do you manage downside risk? And they all said, we have analysts all around the world. We have PhDs, CMTs, CFAs. We are the smart people. And
don't
we
worry.
Have been
we've got this. Yeah.
We've been in business for 200 years. And we know, and of course, the guy we're talking to hasn't been. Anyway, the market crash came. And what did they do? They said, hey, the market will come back up. It always does. What are you calling us for?
They did nothing. It was crazy.
And that's what's going to happen this next time around.
Yep.
To Bob, if he stays where he is, that's what's going to happen in those portfolios. They're going to say, hey, the market always goes up. And you're going to say, it didn't this time. What are we supposed to do here? I mean, I'm down more than I wanted to be down, more than you led me to believe. Well, the market always goes up. And, you know, it may take a few years or two decades. You know, we don't know.
Right, right.
But, you know, just don't use your money. Okay. So why did I set it aside? What a dumb question. Mm. Yeah, you know, call me back next year.
That's the issue. If you saved it all to use now during your retirement, you don't want a financial advisor telling you, well, you know, the best thing for you right now is just hang on. And if there's any chance, don't spend any of that money you spent your entire life saving to spend now. We don't think that's a useful way to look at it. We don't even think it's reasonable to ask someone to do that. So you can't just sit back and say, well, this market will come back sometime and your portfolio will be whole sometime. We have no idea when. That's just not good enough.
So we have a lot of information on our website with the video tabs. And I recommended to Bobby, watch the two Januaries. You want an understanding of why we don't use modern portfolio theory? Watch the January of this year. You want to watch how it works its way through a volatile market. Page down until you get to January of last year and watch both of those. And you are going to be smarter about how you make your own decisions and deal with your own financial advisor. Register for the next May 7th webinar on what's going on in the stock market, IRIradio.com. That's IRIradio.com. Register for the webinar. If you aren't getting our week in review, send us an email, help@IRIradio.com. We're out of time. God bless you. God bless your family. And God bless America. Have a great weekend.